WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News brief. Hamas is warning the Israeli government's plan to seize control of Gaza City would amount to, quote, sacrificing the hostages still being held in Gaza. This man in Tel Aviv is weighing in.
Basically, I think it's a death sentence to hold the hostages that are still being held there. I think that we have to bring all the hostages back home safely.
No word of a deal or consequences as President Trump's deadline for Russia to reach a ceasefire with Ukraine arrives. National Security Contributor Samantha Vinograd.
It will be telling to see if President Trump continues with his deadline for Russia to agree to a ceasefire or if he just extends that indefinitely until there's a summit.
New wildfires burned almost 5,000 acres north of Los Angeles. This man in Castaic's among thousands who've been forced from their homes.
20, 30 animals that we left behind that we couldn't take out. It's scary because we don't know what happened to them or what's going to be when we get back.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Wattles. Two Milwaukee police officers are recovering after risking their lives to save a 17-year-old who crashed his car during a chase Wednesday night. One officer suffered serious second and third degree burns while trying to pull the teen from the burning vehicle. Another was treated for smoke inhalation. The teen wanted in connection with the shooting did not survive the crash. The governor is trying to stop the sun from setting on a solar effort. Governor Tony Evers is urging the EPA to keep federal grants that fund solar projects for low and moderate income families. The agency has signaled it may cancel the program. Evers calls the move unjustified and warns that it could drive up energy bills for Wisconsin families. The wheels on the bus will soon be moving with kids on them, and school bus safety is the August law of the month. Melissa Kay reports.
We're getting closer to the start of the school year, and that means more kids walking or biking early in the morning and in the early afternoon. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation reminds drivers the August law of the month is school bus safety. They say traffic patterns change when school is in session. You'll see more school buses on the road, and you'll need to be mindful of your surroundings to help keep kids safe. Each year, more than 600 crashes happen in Wisconsin involving school buses. The Wisconsin DOT says these crashes are preventable. Remember the rules. When you see flashing red lights, stop at least 20 feet away in both directions. Flashing amber or yellow lights mean the bus is approaching a pickup point and you should slow down and be ready to stop.
With more than 1,100 cats and kittens currently in care, the Wisconsin Humane Society is calling for help. They want people to become foster volunteers to help ease overcrowding. There's more about how to help on the Humane Society's website. And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Wattles.
The Packers preseason underway. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from training camp in Green Bay, where the Packers host the Jets tomorrow night in their first preseason game. Aaron Mosby made the team last year as a linebacker. Does he feel pressure to make the cut this year?
It's always pressure when you're trying to make a 53-man roster. That's just anyone in the league. It can go for anyone. So it's a little bit of pressure, but at the end of the day, you know, it's football. We've been playing this since we were little kids. So you just go out there, you know, try to have fun with it. Try to do your best and try to make a splash play here and there.
College football. The Badgers hold their final practice at UW-Platteville Saturday night before moving back to Madison. Baseball. The Brewers and the Mets in Milwaukee. First baseman Andrew Vaughn continues to hit home runs every series.
Vaughn is unbelievable. Three times on base. One time he just circled the bases. He's been special both offensively, defensively. Vaughn, Collins, and Perkins. They're the three that you got to look at. And Sal, those are great performances by those four.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Partly cloudy and muggy. Our high today right around 88 with wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight 74, tomorrow partly cloudy 89 with a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow night and Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently it's 71.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most, in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media Sports Authority Mike Clemens, and our Wisconsin music expert Terry Barr joins me for Bar Band Friday Night. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Happy Friday. It is August 8th, 2025, 7:06. Nice to have you here back up north as we head into a weekend here on these mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is standing by. We're going to come to him a little early to talk about a federal court decision this week about the dispute over road access on the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation by non-tribal members who own property within the reservation's boundaries. And I'll compare my interpretation of it to Jim's. One of us went to law school. The other just yodels on the radio, but we'll see what we say about that. And then Jim will be back with Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob as we do more of our week in review, some of the headlines of the week. That's all coming up. Dr. Kristen Lyerly in our next hour. And, of course, we'll have sports as well with Mike Clemens. But first, it is time for the forecast heading into the weekend. Parker Olson is here from Madison Studio A2 as we welcome in meteorologist Brittany Merlot, where I thought, well, maybe for a short period here, we could open up the windows because it's going to be really hot later today. Can we open them up for a bit? No, we can't. The humidity is still no bueno, shall we say.
Yeah,
it is sticky.
It is.
And we got that. So I imagine the thunder can't be far behind.
No, it's not. We've got a lot going on here as we head into the weekend. So pay attention if you had any outdoor plans, because you're going to want to listen up. So temperatures right now, 63 degrees is the coolest up in Eagle River. It's about 73 degrees in the big cities, Milwaukee, Madison area. We've got some fog far north and east by the Great Lakes. We've got a low pressure system right now building in North Dakota. It's already dragged the warm front, right? We felt that yesterday. A lot of us did reach those low 90s, and it's going to be very sunny today and still humid, very humid. Dew points in the mid 60s to low 70s. Heat advisories out already for Green Bay, Oshkosh, Shawano area up in those woods, Ashland, Hayward, even over to Siren as well. You're going to see some of the warmest temperatures in the state. Low 90s will be creeping in, and the humidity paired with that means it's going to be feeling more like 100 degrees. Yesterday, our heat index felt about the mid-90s or so. So this is going to get even warmer as we head into this afternoon. And you know, with that low pressure system just sitting out there in the batter's box, it's headed here towards us. So what we're going to see is storms starting this afternoon, probably around 3 o'clock, right towards Superior, Hayward, into the Ashland area, where you're actually in a slight risk for them to be strong to severe. Biggest threats are going to be some high damaging wind gusts, hail, and also some heavy downpours. A quick 1 to 2 inches is possible. So we're looking at first round this afternoon, then another round up there, still far north, overnight, probably around 3 a.m., that could linger into the morning. And then this front is going to start to shift south. It is going to be headed towards the La Crosse, Wausau area by tomorrow morning, probably around 9 a.m. And it is going to be hitting hard. We are in a slight risk, the whole central Wisconsin area from La Crosse to Wausau to Green Bay, down to Sheboygan and over to Madison. This is tomorrow afternoon. Those high damaging winds, also some heavy rain and hail is possible as we go through the morning. They should start to ease up a little bit at night, but more and more rounds start to come through because this front wants to stall. Yep, park itself right over southeastern Wisconsin, where we could see rounds of rain, heavy rain at times, all the way through Tuesday. So this could start Saturday, tomorrow afternoon, all the way through Tuesday, potentially. So we're definitely looking at a flooding risk in the south and eastern parts of the state, where totals could get up to 4-5 inches by the time this kicks all out of here. So as we go into the weekend, be careful out there. A lot of things going on. The temperatures still do stay warm and muggy, even as we go into the weekend and into next week. We're still looking at low to mid 80s. It's still going to be feeling close to near 90 degrees. So very summery conditions. And of course, stormy. So stay weather savvy.
And of course, if you want to get your mowing done, if you want to get that lawn done, today would be it. Doesn't matter if it's hot or not. Just get it done. Which takes us to Robin Tigerton, who says, good morning, sunshine with light fog, 66 degrees. The corn sweat is in full effect. He says, yesterday I got 4 yards mowed in Tigerton, 2 yards in the rural areas today, and we'll get it done early before it gets hot. He says, I can then sit back and watch the Packers game tomorrow night for the football preseason. And notes that, you know, it is football preseason where you go from extreme heat to extreme cold, from tornadoes to blizzards, all between the preseason and the Super Bowl. And channeling his inner Greg and Brittany, he says, yeah, I'm drinking lots of water and Gatorade. And he also says, yeah, we do need rain, just not all at once. And Tony asking, Brittany, what are you doing to Ashland? What? I don't know. Are you doing something to Ashland, or is it just the weather that you're sending to Ashland?
The weather that I'm actually, it's not going to be too bad in Ashland. I mean, today is the worst day of it all. And then honestly, the rest of the weekend, you're looking dry. That's one of the best places to be all weekend.
It's always good to be way up north. Right. Couldn't agree more. Thank you, Brittany. Talk to you a little bit later. All right. Hey, sign up for our daily newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. There's an article in there today about the Wisconsin State Fair being one of the best state fairs in the country in a new USA Today ranking. So there's that. There's one about different types of hiking trails in Wisconsin for whatever type of hiker you are. Wherever you are on the scale, there's a place that's there for you. And there's an article about the dangers to rural health care in Wisconsin and how it's a double whammy with the lack of affordable housing stock in rural Wisconsin. So all of that through our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Also on the website right now, you can see a story that I just posted there that features a video clip that we were able to run before anybody else. It went up this morning. And it's all about rural health care facing a death spiral, in the words of former Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, in an interview with a doctor from TOMA, talking to Dr. Jill McMullen, a family practice doc there, about what the Medicaid cuts that were supported by Congressman Derek Van Orden will mean to people in rural Wisconsin, especially the 3rd Congressional District. So head over to our Instagram and look at an excerpt from the interview or read all about it on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Put in your email address, sign up for our Sunday morning newsletter as well, which will be featuring that and a lot of the other political headlines you might have missed of the past week. One of those just might include a court decision that was handed down this week by a federal judge who basically ruled against the Lac des Flambeaux tribe in its years-long fight to be allowed to block road access to properties inside the reservation now owned by non-tribal members. Essentially, the reservation land, like many others around the country, resembles a checkerboard. Because for a time in the late 19th and early 20th century, the U.S. government monkeyed around with tribal territory, saying that instead of belonging to a tribe as a whole, it had to be cut up into parcels, and that if any individual tribal members decided to sell their parcel to a non-Indian, well, it was no longer tribal land. So in the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation, you have dozens of parcels that belong to non-Indians, but to get to their properties, they have to cross tribal land, of course. Well, when developers built roads to some of those houses in the 1960s, they received tribal permission for the roads known as easements. In most cases, the easements were not timeless. They had expiration dates. And now that the easement permissions have expired after, you know, so many years, the tribe wanted to negotiate new easements that came with payments to continue having that permission to cross tribal lands. Negotiations broke down with the adjoining non-tribal town of Lac des Flambeaux, and the tribe put up barricades 2.5 years ago for a few weeks. Eventually, a temporary deal had the town making payments to the tribe, and the barricades came down. Now, finally, the court case has been decided, and federal judge William Conley put out a 47-page ruling that said, in so many words, those easements don't really mean anything anymore. Once those roads were built and became public roads, non-tribal members get to use them to go to their properties. Now, this is just my evaluation after reading through the decision. It just seems like another of many cases where indigenous people were told one thing, and then the fine print came back to bite them later on. A statement by the tribe says, in part, this decision overlooks key elements of federal law that protect tribal lands and the tribe's inherent sovereign authority to control access to its reservation. Is that it? Probably not. The case has been watched all over as a candidate for the U.S. Supreme Court, since this ruling could have impacts on easements for tribal lands nationwide. So maybe there are still enforceable easements. Maybe they're just a mirage, able to be cast aside in the time it takes for a judge to bang their gavel. So what do you think? When I say it's easements, schmeasements, is that about right? Or is this something that is just a gross mischaracterization of the opinion? If only we had a good attorney to talk to. Here's a good attorney now, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, who joins us a bit early for our week in review and has had to listen to Amateur Hour from somebody who did not attend law school but has read a few court decisions in his day. Jim Santel, good morning. Give me your grade, Professor Santel, if I were one of your law school students.
I give you a solid A in terms of not only the setup and the historical precedent for all of this, and now the result issued by, again, his name is Judge William Conley. He is a longstanding judge, a federal judge located in Madison, which is the Western District, and therefore there's jurisdiction with respect to these tribal cases. And in the end, he finds, as you accurately noted, that neither the United States, again, interesting, the United States here, as we often did in the past, supported tribal rights. And so we come down on the side of the tribe here. Neither tribe nor the United States, he says, have attempted to impose reasonable restrictions on the homeowners' access to these properties. In other words, he's talking also and raising the option, perhaps, that if more reasonableness, there may be some options here still. He says, instead, to date, the tribe has attempted to block access altogether and demanded that the town pay an exorbitant monthly fee to keep those roads open, or a one-time $20 million fee for permanent access. Accordingly, the court concludes the town and the homeowners have an implied easement to use and access of the roads to reach their properties. Again, 47 pages, an awful lot of legality there. Along the way, we're also talking about something called the Indian Right of Way Act. And a lot of this has to do with the interpretation of that. I think you step back, as you are doing this morning, Pat, appropriately, and know, number one, that this is one of those situations. A 47-page opinion certainly reflects that there are reasonable arguments to be made here, right, in the opposite direction. And he wrestles with those. He comes down on the side of the homeowners and not on the side of the United States, most importantly, not on the side of the tribe. The larger issue is just this matter of sovereignty.
Right.
And that's what we go to.
And I'm not finding fault with the judge necessarily. I'm just saying the nature of the law, the way that he interpreted it,
exactly,
certainly does have that, shall we say, bias toward locking in place the checkerboard situation that was put in place by the Dawes Act and by the treaty that the Lac des Flambeaux signed back in something like 1854. All right, Jim will be back to talk with our Week in Review panel. A local break is next for some of you, but first, really quickly, it is Free Ticket Friday, and if you're looking for tickets to the Brewers game next Wednesday afternoon with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Well, text us the word ground, G-R-O-U-N-D, ground, and you can be part of a statewide drawing for tickets as part of Free Ticket Friday. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Experience northern Wisconsin this season and book your vacation at Lena's Northern Pines Resort on beautiful Butternut Lake in Butternut, Wisconsin. This quaint resort has it all. A full-service resort and restaurant, open year-round for all your seasons, from ATVing to snowmobiling, grouse hunting, deer hunting, and even ice fishing. Or just come to relax with the whole family. And there's also an event space for that perfect occasion that you might be celebrating. Butternut Lake is a 1,000 plus acre Class A musky lake, along with walleye, crappie, perch, and panfish that the kids love to catch. It's perfect for escaping the hustle and bustle of the city. Check your next adventure out today. Go to northernpines.net. www.northernpines.net.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. With Governor Tony Evers choosing not to run for a third term, that means we're going to have the first open race for governor in 16 years. We already know who some of the candidates will be. On the Democratic side, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez launched her campaign, and Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said he's running. On the Republican side, Washington County Executive Josh Showman and Southeastern Wisconsin Business Executive Bill Berrien are running. Many more are expected to join the race. And it's not just governor that will have an open race. We could see open races for attorney general, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and state treasurer, too. Couple that with what's happening in the state legislature, no longer under gerrymandered maps, the year 2026 is going to bring a rather unique moment for voters in Wisconsin to determine the path forward on a fresh new era for the state. I know some can be wary of change, but let's embrace this as the real opportunity that it is.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Mommy, how come I can't sit in the front seat?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back. Good morning. Happy Friday. The weekend is almost here, and here is what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin today. If you already didn't know, the Milwaukee Brewers are the best team in baseball, not just because I said so and because I'm a huge fan, but because the statistics say so. They have the best record in baseball, and it's not a fluke. It's not because they're just playing real good right now. It's because of great planning from the entire organization. So that's why we invited J.R. Radcliffe from the Journal Sentinel to talk more about why the Brewers are the team to be watching in the league right now and what we should expect in the last few months of play.
Yeah. Nobody expected this at the beginning of the season. No one.
I mean, I picked them to go 82-80, and I love that for me. It was really really great foresight on my part. Yeah, this is we're so beyond the what could have been expected. I mean, even in mid-May, this was a team that was a few games below 500. It looked pretty middling, had good pitching, but you know, just did not have enough in their offense. And as we've gone along, you know, the pitching's still great, and the offense has absolutely been great. Like, it's been really good to the point that even though they don't hit a lot of home runs or even, like, slug at all, even a lot of extra base hits at all, they're just so good at putting the ball in play, getting on base. It's not that I think they're lucky. I think everything has gone right to some degree. Now, you could certainly argue with that because they've had some injuries lately to Jackson Churio and Jacob Mizrowski, kind of, although that's not that big of a deal, really. You know, they've had maybe a couple hiccups, but for the most part, they have had so many players step up and fill massive roles that you couldn't have envisioned. Isaac Collins, I think, is maybe going to win National League Rookie of the Year. I mean, I could not have even envisioned that. Again, in mid-May, I wouldn't have even – that is not a thought that would have entered my head. And now I think he's actually kind of one of the front runners, if not the front runner, a Madison guy, Drake Baldwin, who plays for the Atlanta Braves, we saw this week. He's probably the only other candidate who's really going to stand in his way. So guys like him and Caleb Durbin and, you know, Logan Henderson, who's filled in really admirably when they've needed somebody. And, you know, even the bullpen guys, the guys that you've kind of come to rely on, they've stepped up and been big. Trevor McGill's been awesome as closer. I mean, they really are getting something out of everybody. And that's what has made them so effective. There is not a spot on that roster that you can attack. And because everybody 1 through 9 is doing something, is getting on base, is working pitchers. And, you know, the pitchers keep it close enough that if they're down a run in the sixth inning, you're not worried that they're going to find some offense and get what it takes. So it's kind of an old school coach's dream right now. The Brewers are winning in ways that, you know, that the teams won in the 1980s and 1990s, but it is so effective for them, this pitching speed and defense model. And they have more wins than any other team in baseball by a couple games at this point. It's pretty crazy.
I feel like we're the Durham Bulls in, you know, it's like playing baseball with grace and everything is working and it's like poetry in motion. So when are we going to ruin it?
Hey.
It is important to note that they're just white hot. You know, they've won 6 in a row coming into this homestand. They almost got us George Webb Burgers a few weeks ago when they won 11 in a row. Before that, they had an 8-game winning streak. I mean, they are on top of everything. It has been sustained. It's been sustained really since toward the end of May. So it's not just a hot streak. It is a just tremendous season at this point. There will be valleys. You know, their schedule is one of the 5 toughest left in Major League Baseball in terms of opponent winning percentage. They do have some pretty big opponents still on the schedule. The Phillies, whom they swept the first time, but still the Phillies are an interesting one early in September. There's this 5-game series coming up in a couple weeks against the Cubs at Wrigley Field. That is going to be massive. The tiebreaker in the NL Central, I think, is going to be a big deal. The Cubs are not going to go away just because the Brewers have bypassed them and are up 4 games. I would not plan on the Cubs just rolling over. They're still a very good baseball team. So that's something to watch. The Brewers are going to be in a tight competition with the Dodgers and potentially the Phillies, whoever the NL East team is, for positioning, for seeding. You know, it's so important now that they're here that they skip that first round playoff series, that wild card series, a lot of coin flip action there where you don't really, it could go either way.
Right.
It went a long way last year against the Mets when the Brewers seemed to have things in control. If they could just skip that best of 3, go straight to the best of 5, that's going to take one of the 2 best records in the National League. They have that right now. They need to keep that. They need to find a way to, and if the Dodgers pass them, that's fine, but no other team then can. They need to hold on to that top 2 record. And it's going to make things a lot easier for them when they get to the postseason.
If you're just joining us, I'm Matt and Aaron, the Civic Media Radio Network. We are talking to our sports guru, Journal Sentinel writer, sports writer J.R. Ratcliffe is here. He's back. We've missed him very, very much. And I've thought about this conversation with you all week.
Oh, boy.
Well, we had a conversation last week with Paul Noonan, and one of the things he did that really, for me as a Brewers fan, and it addresses what you say, Jane, is that as a Brewers fan, you automatically come in with a half-empty mentality. You're like, this is great. When are we going to hit reality?
Exactly. When's the rock going to hit my head?
But what Paul really put out and what you are saying, I'm picking up what you're laying down too. This is not a Brewers that is lucky or on a fluke hot streak. This is a confluence of great decisions from the managing to the front office on acquisitions, on placement, on who's playing, on rosters. And it's working out. And what's wonderful, too, and I don't wish injury upon anyone, and you mentioned this as well, is that in the face of injury of their biggest star players, people are still playing to the top of their game. They're playing optimally. I mean, they have now swept 5 times in a month. 5 mm-hmm. times in a month. They hit 70 wins quicker than they ever have in franchise history. They got more. The closest team is Toronto right now. And for me, I'm no longer at a, well, when is this all going to fall apart? For me personally, as I was someone like you in the beginning of the season who said, yeah, it's probably going to be a ho-hum season. It's not going to be terrible.
Right.
We're not going to be the Rockies or the White Sox, but we're not going to probably be contenders. It might be Craig Counsell's, at least in the division, it might be his year. And it still could be. I understand that. But I see a Brewers team this season for the rest of the games that are remaining that are going to not just give it a fighting chance, but they are going to work to make sure you don't come anywhere near that first place in the division. Whether it's Paul Noonan or J.R. Ratcliffe, you can catch our sports gurus on Matt and Aaron Air 10:30 Thursdays every single week. They're going to break down whatever's happening in sports, whether it's Packers, Bucks, or my beloved Brewers. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, go to WAUKradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
There may not be a lot of policy development catching the attention in Washington, D.C., but there's one bill that Wisconsin pork producers are still paying attention to. I'm PM Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. It's called the Save Our Bacon Act, and it's really designed to restore interstate commerce to the state of California. Remember, California has something called Proposition 12 in place that dictates exactly how pork producers must raise their animals and how egg producers must raise their animals. And that's turned into very expensive pork and eggs for California consumers. Morgan Warwick is the program and marketing director at the Wisconsin Pork Association.
I think it's different for every pork producer. Some are Prop 12 compliant, some are not. But at the end of the day, if we know what regulations we have to abide by and that we can raise pork the way we feel is best for our operation, that's what's important for producers. And so we want to be able to have our pig farmers continue to do what's best for their pigs, their families, and their operations while still delivering a safe, consistent, affordable food product for consumers.
Morgan Warwick with the Wisconsin Pork Association. She says addressing the fix of Proposition 12 is not only critical for California, but it also will keep other states from putting in place their own individual guidelines for food production.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick? How did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop bill? Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
When hot weather strikes your cattle, milk production drops and feed intakes decrease. Summer heat also impacts the quality of your herd's reproduction. Protect your cows and grow your bottom line. Add BioVets Bovine Gold Light to your cow's daily ration. Bovine Gold Light keeps the herd hydrated, maintains milk production, and keeps your breeding program in check. Learn more about Bovine Gold Light at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
And the final few days now of the Wisconsin State Fair, State Fair Park in West Allis. Earlier this week, the Governor's Blue Ribbon Livestock Auction was held. And while many will pay attention to the $35,000 paid for the Grand Champion Steer, what's forgotten is that that auction also awarded $55,000 in scholarships and contributed an additional $30,000 in financial support to Exhibitor Showmanship, Master Showman, and Reserve Champion Awards. That's just a quick update on what's happening in food news on a Friday. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Partly cloudy and muggy. Our high today right around 88 with wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight 74, tomorrow partly cloudy 89 with a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow night and Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently it's 71.
Matt Nair on air.
Here's my gripe. MTV made it possible for really subpar performers to become stars. Madonna would never have been a star if it hadn't been for MTV and her grinding her way across the floor in a wedding dress.
See, that's where I think your gripe isn't with MTV. I think your gripe is with Madonna grinding on MTV.
Thank you, Matt from Richland Center. How dare you, Jane?
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Laura McCoy, she is a member of the Green Bay School Board.
In the 1990s, revenue caps were put into place, and Green Bay was a conservative, low-spending district. Mm-hmm. We've been struggling with that basically ever since. The people in our community have stepped up again and again to pass referendums. That's wonderful, but we need that per-pupil increase. We need the cash to keep the lights on, basically, and to pay our staff what they deserve.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, the weekend is almost here. We'll look at weekend activities across the state of Wisconsin and look at the news and the weird and wacky with Peter Apine of EPOM's World. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You can follow me on social media. Head over to facebook.com/morningswithpatcreitlow. And not only can you see the show live there as we stream it on Facebook, but we also add occasional posts about things that are in the news or maybe discussions that you missed earlier. For example, I had Trygve Olsen on just yesterday morning. Trygve has worked with fledgling democracies around the world, and now he's trying to save democracy here in the United States. And so if you don't have time to go back and listen to the show or watch the video of it, we've got a post up on my Facebook page, just a text post that talks about what we discussed and where we invite you to chime in with your thoughts as well. So again, head over to Facebook and look for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Our Week in Review panel is here. Jennifer Scholze, Mark Jacob, and former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, all with us on this Friday morning. Just another day in Trump's America where just when you were done hearing about troops being sent to Los Angeles for no particular good reason, Jennifer, it appears the troops need somewhere else to go. So Washington, D.C. is going to be the next blue city of under Trump occupation is the way it seems to look here.
Yes, one of the top DOGE workers, one of those almost teenagers, claims he was mugged in Washington, D.C. earlier this week. Elon Musk posted about it on social media. Trump got into it, and suddenly the right wing was agog at crime in D.C., which is actually at a 30-year low. Last night, Trump announced that he was sending federal troops into Washington as early as today to patrol tourist venues and the like. I think it's obviously just a show of force, and you know, one possible event is not a reason to turn a city into an armed fortress. But there we are.
Oh, but it is ample reason, Mark Jacob. I mean, you only need the one thing there, and I think where I want to go with this is how this is reported, because you know, in the Wisconsin version of it, you had 20 lawmakers, 20 legislators, sending a letter to the mayor of Milwaukee saying you need to do something about crime in your city because there had recently been one high-profile shooting. And, you know, what's the mayor supposed to do other than say crime is down in our city? And it really, it's incumbent upon newsrooms to put some perspective on a letter like that when legislators are playing the quote-unquote Milwaukee card.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important for people to understand that crime is dramatically down in the United States over the last 30 years. It's way lower than it was in the 1990s. This is a good news story. This is policies and people doing good things so that crime is down. But the interesting thing, Pat, was that when they did a public opinion surveys over the last 30 years, almost always people would say crime is up. But the statistics show it's way down. So it's one of those things where it's really easy to for people to get false impressions. And then you have, you know, people like Fox News and other kind of propaganda services, you know, demagoguing the issue so that they don't want to get to the truth. They just want to, you know, use excuses to try to increase government power. And again, here I am talking about the Republicans who always are talking about government being on our necks, wanting to increase government power, because that's what's going on right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, in every way, shape, or form, whether it's, you know, sending the military into a city, or as we discussed last hour, having the Corps of Engineers raise a river level so that J.D. Vance can go kayaking on it. I mean, you know, small government only for thee, but not for me. And Mark, you remind me, I don't have it in front of me here, but I mean, one of the most telling graphics of the 2024 election was when respondents were asked like six different questions. It was five or six questions like that. Is crime down or up? You know, is immigration, you know, down or up? And consistently, the people who answered all of them wrong, who got wrong, these are factual questions. There's a correct yes or no. And the ones who went 0 for 6 overwhelmingly voted for Trump because, Jennifer, that's the narrative that they get from their choice in quote-unquote news.
Right. If you watch Fox News, oh, gosh, I had a promised myself I would never call it Fox News. I would call it Fox Cable. Fox Cable. If you watch that, you do not know what's going on. Right now, you think the biggest story in the world is the Sydney Sweeney jeans ad. Yeah. And you think that crime is up, prices are down, Trump is great. And it's really done a terrible disservice to this country to just share so many lies so frequently with so many people.
Well, and it's funny, they loved the tabloid story of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. They loved it until Trump went about face on it, and suddenly they're pretending the story never existed. Meanwhile, you know, in traditional media, you're seeing Jim Santel, you're seeing Ghislaine Maxwell being transferred to a lower security prison, which, near as I can see, is amazingly unprecedented for somebody who doesn't seem to have done anything to deserve that, given the horrific things she did to children.
Two observations exactly along those lines. Number one, this is a violent crime. And again, I call upon everyone, including the media, to reinforce that notion. This is, yes, it's about sex, but it's about power and it's about violence. The human trafficking, the sex trafficking in which she, and very likely the principal defendant who did commit suicide in prison here, they engaged in violent crime. So what is the consequence of that? Inside the Bureau of Prisons, it is an entity of the U.S. Department of Justice, where once again, people who know what they're doing up until now have had the capacity to make assessments of incoming convicts, incoming defendants, and make a determination about the security level of the facility to which they should be assigned. She is high violence, high security defendant, and she should remain there in Tallahassee. Instead, leapfrogging over all sorts of internal, I know it sounds wonky, but regulations that are there for a reason to protect the American public and also, frankly, to protect the very lives and livelihood of the people who are in those prisons. She is sent over to Texas at what is, again, euphemistically called a camp, where, again, there are low gates and things around the perimeter. And it is unjustifiable in terms of not only the standards, the precedent. If I were a criminal defense attorney in America today, and I was representing a violent criminal in that category, and that person was going off to a high security prison, I would file a motion with the federal district court judge, wherever that is, and say, obviously, the Bureau of Prisons has changed its standards. I want the same deal. And that's also the impact of this beyond just this inappropriate, indefensible designation.
Mark, should I be half empty or half full my glass on the Epstein case in terms of the impact on Trump? Because when he flipped and suddenly it became a hoax and we learned that his name had come up in some fashion in the files, once again, like so many other times, it feels like just when he's going to face accountability, the American attention span moves. And Speaker Mike Johnson sent Congress home early on their recess. And so here's the half empty, half full. Has Trump again, you know, slipped accountability for whatever misdeeds he created, or did he simply put a pin in it? And when Congress comes back, those members of Congress are going to be as vocal as ever about releasing all of the files, and we'll be hearing about this all over again.
I think this is an exception to everything else. You know, I mean, he's gotten away with so much horrible conduct, but this one seems to, for some reason, and I'm not sure exactly why, but for some reason, this seems to be sticking. I mean, it's been a month, right? You know, since the latest thing where, you know, Pam Bondi you know, announced that it was all sitting on her desk and she was just going to review it and release it. And then they decided, well, no, there are actually no, there's no Epstein list. You know, we're going to have to, you know, we're not going to release anything more, which is, I mean, and that outraged the right as well as the, you know, the left and just all decent people who don't want, you know, children molested and then it be to be covered up by our government. You know, so I think it's sticking. I mean, and there are ways we can help it continue to stick as a tough issue. I mean, I don't even call it the recess anymore. I call it the Epstein recess. This is Congress on an Epstein recess. And, you know, because they fled town to avoid voting on whether to release records that may show that powerful people were involved in child sex trafficking. That's what's going on. And decent people don't do that. Mike Johnson does it because he's not a decent person.
So we look at this recess, Jennifer, and how it gets covered. And on the one hand, you could see that it's going to be one of the busiest recesses ever, as, you know, when there's the occasional town hall, like Flood in Nebraska, like Stile in Wisconsin. And as more people learn what's in, you know, the Trump mega bill, they want to speak up. They don't like it. As more people kind of see through the noise on the Epstein files, they don't like it. And yet, I know, because I've already seen this, if a member of Congress comes home for recess and, you know, tours a farm, the coverage is all about the congressman who came home and did a farm tour. So if you were running a newsroom in one of these districts and it's the August recess, how do you make sure that your coverage is relevant to, you know, the country's priorities and the viewers' values?
I was one of those reporters in one of those rural districts when the congressperson came home, and we were very excited when we got invited to go to a farm tour or a press conference because it was something out of the ordinary and it seemed really important. And I don't want to disparage in any way any local journalists anywhere right now, because I think most of them are doing a hell of a job. But I will say there's enormous pressure for younger, inexperienced journalists who get a chance to interview a congressperson. Oh, my gosh. And to call them out, to ask them hard questions is not something that, if you haven't done it before and it's your first job and you're 21 years old, I think it's hard. I know it was hard for me. I got an opportunity to do one of those with the then Vice President of the United States. And he just rolled right over me with every question I asked him. So I think it's hard. That said, a lot of these folks, because these town halls and some of these things are so contentious, there's a lot more experienced reporters. And I do think experience matters in this case where they, you know what, just ask the darn question. But you're right. That's what politicians do. They know that they're going to walk through a farm field with a friendly crowd, and they're doing it intentionally that way so that they get the pretty pictures and no hard questions.
And what they can, if they get the hard questions, and I know you put up one recently with Congresswoman Nancy Mace, but we've certainly seen it with Derek Van Orden. If they don't like the question, Jennifer, well, now they just have this angry outburst at the person, which used to, you know, kill your reputation, but now it burnishes your reputation if you yell at a local reporter.
Well, you know what? I think it does and it doesn't, right? I mean, if you're a Fox News viewer, you're like, yeah, get him, because Trump has convinced you and Fox has helped that the press is the bad, they're the bad guys. But what we're seeing, especially in a lot of these recent town halls, but think back to the town halls, you know, and before that, regular people who aren't in the Fox bubble, they kind of get it. And so when they see Nancy Mace, as she did yesterday, go after that reporter for saying, how can you say you're for this when you voted against it? How can you take credit for it? And Nancy Mace starts just railing on her. If you're not in the Fox bubble, I think you see that and you're like, ugh.
Exactly. Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob and Jim Santel, our Week in Review panel with us. And again, for free ticket Friday, the word is ground, G-R-O-U-N-D. Text that through the Civic Media app. A local update is next for some of you folks here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We
rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
540 WAUK presents This Week in Waukesha, a weekly podcast available anytime you want it.
Hey, it's Downtown Danny Brown, and This Week in Waukesha, we are acting locally, thinking globally, talking about the floods in Texas, who's to blame, and what can we learn about it here in Wisconsin. We're also going to honor the baseball's rising stars, especially at the local level, and then, of course, the politics of softball. Join us. It's going to be a great show.
This Week in Waukesha, a podcast always available online at waukradio.com.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A legal challenge against the Line 5 oil pipeline is set to begin August 12th in Ashland. Canadian oil giant Enbridge wants to trench and blast across northern Wisconsin to make way for a new 41-mile section of the pipeline. Environmental groups and the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa are challenging permits and other approvals for the project issued by the DNR. Environmental groups across Wisconsin are calling on the state's congressional representatives not to support a bill that would weaken the Clean Water Act. The so-called Permit Act would, among other harms, allow polluters to release PFAS forever chemicals into waterways without telling state officials, allow massive amounts of pesticides to be released into waterways, and fast-track projects that destroy wetlands and streams. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
An unsuspecting driver at a gas station in Wisconsin.
Welcome, Pump 15. How you doing?
Great.
Were you wearing your seatbelt today?
I never wear my seatbelt.
We're going to get him. We're going to get him real good.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
Dollar driver. It takes 1 second to strap a seatbelt on. Well, let's do this. Let's do it together. Now, don't that feel better?
Donald Driver can't always be there to remind you.
Click it or tick it.
And let's reduce fatalities on Wisconsin roadways.
And I should have recognized your voice when you're harassing
me. I'm watching you.
Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Actor Neil McDonough. If you saw his face or if you Google him right now, you'll recognize him. He refuses to kiss another woman on camera. On the one hand, I applaud him for not kissing anyone other than his wife, but she says I don't have a problem with him if he wanted to kiss another woman. As someone who's done it, it doesn't really feel like cheating because there's people in the room. It's very mechanical.
You did write it yourself.
I did write it myself.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. Earlier this week, I played for you a clip of an interview I had with Angela Lang. She's the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, also known as BLOC. We had a discussion about the governor's race, specifically one candidate that is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, who has yet to officially announce his bid for 2026, but has said he will be running and will have more information soon. So Angela and I sat down, talked about the man himself, and the challenges he will face on the campaign trail. In fact, it opens up with a question I posed to Angela about this regarding how he's going to handle those who may doubt his validity as well as his qualifications to possibly be governor of Wisconsin. Let me ask you something from your experience as from organizing, from being in the political world, from being a person of color in Milwaukee. Does it serve David Crowley better to stay ahead of it, confront it quickly, maybe try to have either an ad or a piece of mail, something that says, like, I understand the hesitations, I'm here to talk about it, and make himself open to it rather than what some politicians can do and say, don't worry about it, we're a melting pot, we're Wisconsin. Does it do him better to confront it and kind of shut down the conversation before it can get out of hand?
I think that's a good question. I think
instead of like trying to shut it down, I think what I always want to see and what I've heard from other members of the Black community is that people want to see that you're not running away from the thing, right? Like, we're going to see these candidates. It's not a secret. David Crawley is Black, right? Like,
wait a minute. That's
plot twist, in case you've never seen him before. He is a Black man. And so I think it's one of those things. I've seen Black candidates, whether they be in Wisconsin or all across the country, I've seen folks sometimes try to hide that or run away from the historic nature of it. But I also think if you're running for a statewide election, people need to see themselves in your story, right? And I think it's important for him to talk about how his story is not just a Black story. His story can be relatable to folks in the rural community or low income places or people that have also struggled in the same way that he has struggled. So I think there's going to have to be a balance of, you know, again, not running from the fact that he's a Black man, but also expanding his story out so people feel reflected in some of his struggles despite his race. But also, I think Black folks always get a little excited when we see one of our own kind of make it, so to speak.
And that brings up a good point. I should rephrase what I meant. Instead of saying shutting it down, is opening the door to the conversation and having it sooner rather than, as you said, you know, don't try to push it away. Don't try to forget about it. Make it, you know, you're right. This is a Black man running for governor. This is something that we do not see in this state. Many states do not see this. So, yeah, keeping that door open, keeping the conversation going, and inviting those who have hesitations and may participate in dog whistles, whether they know it or not, but to say, here is who I am, and here is how I want to help us. And I think that's important for all candidates. You know, you're not the governor of your neighborhood. You are the governor of 6 million people in a state of very diverse backgrounds, ideas, and incomes and whatnot. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he handles it when he officially throws that hat in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, I say this full disclosure, I've known County Executive Crawley long before he was elected, and I've not made an endorsement, but I am watching his non-campaign very closely. And you know, I think any candidate has, you know, a responsibility to tell their story, to get people to know who they are. But again, I think it's being able to tell this full holistic story of, yes, I'm a Black man with struggles, but also I can still relate to all of these other people. And this is how I can bring people together, building that coalition where people see themselves reflected. And at the same time, Black folks, it's always encouraging to see yourself reflected, because there's something about that lived experience. You feel someone understands you. And so if Black folks feel, okay, there's a candidate that understands my lived experience as a person in Milwaukee, how do folks in the rest of the state also feel that they can connect with his experience? And that's a question for all candidates.
Well, this is definitely a conversation we're going to continue over the months and the months and the year. And before we know it, Election Day is here. That wasn't meant to be a rhyme, Angela, but Angela Lang, I always appreciate you stopping by, having fun with me, and having a great discussion.
Of course. Thanks so much.
If you liked that conversation, great, because Angela Lang will be a regular guest on this show coming up in the coming weeks and months, because I want her opinion on what's going on in Milwaukee and southeastern Wisconsin, and she always brings the great information. So I thank Angela for being here, and I look forward to our next discussion, which may be about air and water quality in the city, and it might be on Monday. So if you want to hear that, stay tuned. Another great thing about Angela is she is a regular guest host here on Civic Media. You can always catch her either sitting in for me and Jane on Matt and Aaron Air, or on the Maggie Dawn Show when she sits in with Matt Rothschild. And if that wasn't enough, she's a regular contributor to the Recombobulation area. She's won awards for her stories and her op-ed pieces, so check that out as well. Subscribe to the Recombobulation area and read more from Angela. If you'd like to catch up with any of our shows from Civic Media, go to our website, civicmedia.us/shows. You can find everything out there, and you can download episodes directly to your device, listen to them whenever you would like, wherever you would like. Once again, civicmedia.us/shows. Stick around, because after the break, Pat welcomes Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot to the show, as well as the host of the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Her name is, Dr. Kristen Lierley. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To take your favorite WAUK shows with you on the go, download the free Civic Media app at the Apple or Google Play Store. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. I will talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
Is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News brief. It'll be another dry, hot day north of L.A., where a new wildfire has torn through almost 1,000 acres in a single day. Thousands of people have been forced from their homes, others in wait-and-see mode.
We have all the animals in the car, important documents, and we're ready if we got to go.
Scary, that's for sure, you know, but I'm going to try to stay as long as I can to protect my home.
Israel's cabinet has approved a plan for the IDF to take control of Gaza City. CBS's Deborah Patta has reaction.
Civilians, they say there is nothing left to occupy. They're already dying, 100,000 deaths every day, and that the offensive won't kill Hamas, but women and children.
Today is President Trump's deadline for a Russia-Ukraine ceasefire, but there's no word of a deal. The BBC's Steve Rosenberg.
In a flash, we've gone from talking about American ultimatums and deadlines to let's have a summit. And this, Vladimir Putin will consider already a diplomatic victory.
CBS News brief.